Yeah, I'm from University of Sydney, where I'm doing my PhD. I work on psychiatric classification systems from a philosophical perspective. I work with Dominic Murphy and Peter Godfrey Smith. This is only a part of the paper that was in the abstract because it would have been too long, and I've changed my mind about the second part anyway. I hope this is still okay. The data-driven development of a structurally valid classification system through latent variable modeling has recently become the focus of much research in psychiatry. Although philosophers have paid little attention to the results of this line of work thus far, there is, however, an interesting question that could be raised regarding the status of the latent liability factors identified in these studies. Should we interpret them as causes of psychopathology? In this short talk, I argue for two claims. Firstly, I show that, on a face value account, the latent liability factors can be treated as the result of existential abductive inferences, implying a substantive realist interpretation of these factors as hypothetical causes of psychopathology. Secondly, I argue that the latent liability factors do not qualify as legitimate causal variables within the standard interventionist framework. The structure of my talk is as follows. I'll start off by describing the situation in psychiatry that gave rise to a specific research program. Next, I will explain the methodology and results of this research program. In particular, I argue that the use of psychometric techniques leads to explanations that posit specific kinds of entities as causes of overt psychopathology. Finally, I'll explore the difficulties one encounters when trying to interpret the posited entities as causes within a specific account of causation prominent in the philosophy of psychiatry. But psychiatry is in crisis. At least that is the sentiment often expressed among many highly influential research psychiatrists and clinical psychologists. While the biomedical sciences more generally have enjoyed major breakthroughs and many advances throughout the past 50 years, psychiatry has little to show for so far. Little do we know yet for certain when it comes to the causes and mechanisms underlying psychopathology, and the development of highly specific and effective treatments has been slow as a result. Many believe that the fault lies, at least in part, with our current classification systems. The International Classification of Disease and the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. While diagnostic categories contained in these classifications were intended to delineate discrete mental disorders, critics claim that they are invalid because they do not refer to distinct disease entities, they do not carve nature at its joints. Consequently, there have been efforts to work on suitable changes or replacements. Today, I'll be talking about one such line of research which has been actively pursued in the past 15 years. For the purposes of this paper, I'll call this line of research the Restructuring of Psychopathology Project, or RPP for short. The RPP gets its motivation from the striking and often replicated finding that mental disorders, as defined by our current classification systems, are highly comorbid. Mental disorders co-occur much more often within individuals than would be expected by chance, given their respective base rates. Roughly, their co-occurrence conforms to the rule of halves. Half the people who qualify for the diagnosis of one disorder qualify for another, and half of those with two diagnoses qualify for a third, and so on. As Cuspy et al. Put it in their paper from 2014, "The high rates of comorbidity observed among mental disorders suggest that there might be a more parsimonious structure to psychopathology than implied by current nosologies that identify many separate and distinct disorders. Thus, the RPP's aim is to develop a structurally valid classification system by uncovering this more parsimonious structure. RPP studies begin with a large sample supposedly representative of a part of the general population. In the first step, each individual or patient is assessed for symptoms and pathological behaviors shown within the past month, year, or the entire lifetime. In the second step, they are assigned any and all the psychiatric diagnoses that they qualify for. It should be noted that any hierarchical exclusion rules will typically be disregarded in this context. It should also be noted that from a psychometric perspective, it is not quite clear what we are doing when a diagnosis is assigned. The third step is an analysis of the patterns of covariation and correlations between the disorders. The key finding here is that almost all of the correlations between the disorders are positive. Reflecting the high comorbidity rates referred to before, patients suffering from one type of psychopathology tend to suffer from other types as well. This correlational pattern is similar to the one found in intelligence research, commonly referred to as the positive manifold, where people who do well on one type of cognitive ability test tend to do well on all other types of ability tests. According to the RPP, it is this correlational pattern, what I call the positive manifold of psychopathology, which is the exponendum, the phenomenon in need of a simple and unifying explanation. How does the RPP try to explain the correlational patterns found in their studies? Through the use of latent variable models. While a variety of latent variable models has been applied, I'll focus on factor analytic models for now. The basic idea behind factor analytic models is that patterns of correlation between observed variables can be accounted for by underlying latent variables which are taken to be unobservable. Here's one quote from an authoritative textbook on confirmatory factor analysis, referenced by proponents of the RPP, spelling this idea out more fully. I quote, "The fundamental intent of factor analysis is to determine the number and nature of latent variables or factors that account for the variation and covariation among a set of observed measures commonly referred to as indicators. Specifically, a factor is an unobserved variable that influences more than one observed measure and that accounts for the correlations among these observed measures. In other words, the observed measures are correlated because they share a common cause." Again, just to clarify the terminology, factor models contain two types of variables that are of importance. First, we have the variables that we can directly observe. These are called the observed variables, indicators, or measures. They provide us with the input for the factor analysis. Secondly, we have the variables that are derived from the factor analysis. These are called latent variables, factors, or constructs. They are said to be latent, underlying, or unobservable, which means that we don't have direct access to them. We can't simply go out in the world and determine their values. Instead, we infer that they are there because if they were there, they would explain or account for the variation and covariation among the observed variables. Also, we don't know what these factors actually are. However, we interpret them by looking at what kind of observed variables they seem to influence in what way. Okay, in general, at least in terms of face value practice, the factor model counts as a reflective measurement model and embodies the idea that there are common causes out there that we can detect and identify using factor analysis. The factors, or latent variables, should be understood as hypothesized entities, posited for explanatory purposes, influencing the observed indicator variables. I should stress that this is the received view of factor analysis in psychometrics and not my own. Please note that, at least for now, I'll disregard any questions as to whether that really is what we are doing in psychometrics if looked at from a deeper and possibly deflationary perspective. What would a typical factor model look like in the context of the RPP? You can see the result model of a very recent study using exploratory factor analysis right here. This study by Blanco et al. And co-authored by Robert Krueger, one of the main proponents of the RPP, looks at data for adolescents from the National Comorbidity Survey, a large-scale survey of mental health in the US. In this model, it is the mental disorders at the bottom of the figure which are taken to be the observable variables or indicators. It is the circled variables such as internalizing or general psychopathology above that are the latent variables or latent liability factors doing the explaining. So for instance, in this model, the positive correlations found between major depressive episodes and generalized anxiety disorder would result from both of them being influenced by a common cause, namely the distress disorder's liability factor. But what kind of explanation is this? Going along with most of the literature in psychometrics and the few papers dealing with factor analysis in philosophy, I think the most reasonable interpretation of this kind of practice is that we are looking at an existential abduction. In this particular case, the inference would have the following form. The distinctive correlational pattern I call the positive manifold of psychopathology is identified as a surprising empirical phenomenon in need of explanation. If the latent liability factors posited in Blanco et al.'s hierarchical factor model existed and acted as described, then the positive manifold of psychopathology would follow as a matter of course. Thus, there are grounds for judging the hypothesis of the existence of these liability factors to be initially plausible and worthy of further pursuit. Why is this kind of inference called an existential abduction? Because it tells us about the existence of liability factors, but nothing about their nature or what kind of thing they are. What seems undeniable, however, is that within the face value practice of the RPP, these latent liability factors are interpreted realistically as underlying causes of observable psychopathology. Okay, one might be tempted to say, but what are causes? Of course, this is a big question and I won't attempt to answer it here. What I would claim, however, is that within the philosophy of psychiatry, many prominent scholars subscribe to the interventionist account of causation as developed by James Woodward, following the work of Judea Pearl and others. Apart from Woodward himself, John Campbell and Kenneth Candler have been vocal advocates of the interventionist model. Now, if one were to adopt an interventionist account of causation, the question arises whether the latent liability factors would actually count as causes. I will argue in a moment that that's not the case. But in order to do so, some of the basic features of interventionism have to be introduced. As the name suggests, on this account, causal relations and claims are characterized and analyzed in terms of interventions. Causal relationships describe what will happen to some variables, the effects, when we manipulate or intervene on others, the causes. Here's one of Woodward's own characterizations that will suffice for our purposes. X causes Y if and only if, were some intervention that changes the value of X to occur, Y, or the probability distribution of Y, would change in some regular, stable way in some range of background circumstances, B. There are some general requirements that an intervention has to fulfill. Thus, in order for something to count as a surgical intervention I on X with respect to Y, I has to cause a change in X. I does not cause a change in Y via some route that does not go through X, and I is exogenous in the sense of itself not having a cause that affects Y via a route that does not go through X. That's standard. Okay, but there's more. According to Woodward, for a quote, "For a variable to qualify as a legitimate causal variable within an interventionist framework, the notion of manipulating it must be well defined. It must be the sort of thing that it makes sense to think of as the target for an intervention." Generalizing from an example he gives, we could spell this out by saying that to the extent that we are unsure about what counts as an intervention on X, or the results of such intervention on X seem to vary depending on what kind of manipulations we perform, X will not be a well-defined causal variable from the viewpoint of an interventionist account of causation. I'm now going to argue that in the case of the latent liability factors, there are no suitable interventions of the required kind available. If that is indeed the case, latent liability factors do not qualify as legitimate causal variables. Latent liability factors do not count as causes simply because, presently, we just don't have any idea as to their nature or what kind of thing they are. Accordingly, we do not know what it would take for us to manipulate them. We have no idea what a hypothetical experiment would look like that would change the value of any latent liability factor for any given individual. Thus, at present, We do not know what it means for a latent liability factor to be manipulated and surgically intervened upon. And none of the latent liability factors should count as well-defined causal variables within the interventionist account of causation. Okay, given that they currently fail to qualify as interventionist causes, it seems reasonable to ask whether there are other realist interpretations that could be given to the latent liability factors. One way to interpret the different latent liability factors is as predispositions for the development of different types of psychopathology. In fact, proponents of the RPP often invoke the terms predisposition or propensity when talking about the externalizing or internalizing factors. Taken at face value, this interpretation seems to imply that liability factors represent tendencies to suffer from certain kinds of mental disorders and nothing more. Qua disposition, they are causally inert. But this apparently is not what people like Krueger and his colleagues have in mind when they talk about predispositions acting and influencing the development of psychopathology. A second way to interpret them is as causal pathways. This is another term sometimes employed to characterize and talk about the latent liability factors, especially in connection with so-called common pathway models in behavioral genetics. In a common pathway model, the general genetic, shared environmental, and non-shared environmental effects are mediated by a latent phenotype, as Krueger and colleagues have called it. Here it seems obvious that the latent phenotypes are supposed to play a causal role as mediating variables. However, so far, the latent phenotypes are nothing but a representation of the variance shared among the measured phenotypes. Again, we know nothing about the nature of the phenotypes and how we could possibly manipulate them in the right way. Thus, they wouldn't count as well-defined causal variables within the interventionist account of causation. For that to be the case, more is required. So a different interpretation of the latent liability factors would be to take them as representing specific features of or processes unfolding within individuals that we haven't yet identified. In a sense, this interpretation is the one people like Krueger must have in mind, since it provides the rationale for the whole restructuring of psychopathology project. Ultimately, the latent variable models were supposed to help reclassify psychopathology in a way that would speed up research intended to uncover its causal underpinnings. As Krueger himself put it in one of his highly influential papers, "The results offer a novel perspective on comorbidity, suggesting that comorbidity results from common underlying core psychopathological processes. The results thereby argue for focusing research on these core processes themselves rather than on their varied manifestations as separate disorders." Despite Krueger's optimism, it is only future research that will tell whether the latent liability factors really represent such core psychopathological processes. Only if they do will this render them legitimate causal variables within the interventionist account of causation. To sum up, what I try to show in this talk is, firstly, that the face value practice of the restructuring of psychopathology project produces models containing liability factors that are treated as common causes of psychopathology. Secondly, I show that we don't have any reason to accept these liability factors as legitimate, well-defined causal variables within an interventionist account of causation at the moment, and I tried to outline what it would take for them to become well-defined causal variables in the future. And that's it. Thanks.
If you only do the depression scale and the patient shows that, okay, there could be depression. depressed, they get diagnosed with depression, we try to treat the depression. But if you do a whole bunch of other scales, they tick off on a whole bunch of other scales. So the question is, what do they really have and what should be modified?
Yeah.
So I take it when we do the factor analysis, so we do a panel of testing, and then we do a factor analysis to see whether there's some latent variables that might explain why the patient or population of patients are reacting in particular ways to the panel of questionnaires.
Yeah.
So I said, within that statistical information you get out of the latent variable, sometimes it might give us some information to say, well, look, you know, in all these different scales, we often ask certain questions about sleeping behavior or sleeping stuff. And maybe the latent variable, like it gives us some information to say, look, they're ticking off every one of these sleeping ones. So it gives us a hint of, okay, either that's a big symptom for this patient, whether we want to call it depression or anxiety or something else, sleep disorder is a big thing here, and we can go ahead and modify that. And so I just wondered whether, so doesn't that sound a little bit like Woodward's sort of interventionist that? So sometimes we might be able to identify a latent variable that can be modified or manipulated.
Yes and no. I mean, you've got the picture exactly right, in a way. That's the whole point of the exercise, is to look other things that co-vary in a way that would suggest, well, there's something underlying that co-variation. And then you would identify a factor that would be a sleeping disturbance, would be called a sleeping disturbance factor. And then and then the idea is, well, we should focus research on that and try to intervene on that. The problem is, you have identified this in a factor analysis, but you don't actually know what it is that you are trying to target and intervene on. In terms of real world things that you could do to a patient. So people like Kruger, they talk about intervening on internalizing and give an example of using antidepressant medication or something like that. Well, that's one meaning of intervention, but it's not the right type of intervention, because you can't be sure that the intervention is actually targeting some kind of underlying core process or is directly affecting the symptoms that are manifest in the behavior.
Thank you.
Yes. Yes.
So I'm just wondering what sense you are using the existential approach in your model.
Yeah, so this is what Kruger actually did. He uses it to posit this, as he calls it, core underlying psychopathological processes. So that's the whole point. Like, he wants to find these things through statistical analysis and posits that. Well, that was the first part, and posits them as causes of things, but whether there actually are these things out there in the world that we can find when we look at patients, that's the different question, the important question. So, yeah.
Okay, can I if there really is a conflict or inconsistency between what Kruger and Co. are saying and the interventionist view of causation, in my immediate reaction is, if that really is the case, then so much the worse for that view of causation.
Yes.
Can I just say, put it more broadly, because really what Kruger and Co. are doing is just applying a much more general principle. It's right and left principle of the common cause, roughly speaking. A and B are correlated, either A causes B, B causes A, all those common cause. Now but on the face of it, you're saying right and left common cause principle is inconsistent with the interventionist view of causation. It says we can infer the existence of a common cause, and doesn't say anything about it. That's what right and left principle will say. So you're sort of saying the interventionist view is inconsistent with the right and left common cause principle, which let's face it, most scientists will say, well, that's so much the worse for interventionist views of causation.
Yeah. So you're completely right. What I've argued for is, first of all, is a conditional claim. So if you accept the interventionist account of causation, then they wouldn't count as causes, which says nothing about whether you should actually accept that account. And you could turn it the other way around and say, well, if that makes us reject these things as causes, then we should get use modus tollens and just get rid of the interventionist account of causation. And apparently, this is something people try to argue. I just read the paper by Alex Broadbent, who tries to make an argument sort of this kind in epidemiology. But inconsistency is too strong. So if we could identify these factors, or if they were realized in a specific way, or instantiated, that's the terms people use, in the right sort of way, if there was something within patients that varies like a dimension that you could intervene on, then that they would count as causes. So it's not yet clear. I mean, both of these are inferences. And to connect that to the question about the abductive inferences, that's just one kind of inference that you could make to use this common cause principle. You could also try to come up with models that actually posit causal relations between the indicators. That would give you the same correlations.
So Woodward says you don't actually have to do the intervention, so you've just got to be hypothetical.
Yeah.
And the problem is actually you take it really quite far. So here's an example of one we could think of doing this, but then it's going way too far. So you've got someone who has one of these latent variables. Now most mental illnesses are heritable to a degree, at least many are. So let's assume this person has a child, gets pregnant. That you could then intervene on the child in the womb. So there's a statistical probability of that person with a latent variable transmitting it to a child, and you could hypothetically, this is only hypothetical with regards to the ethical issues, intervene on the child. So theoretically, you might be able to stop them having a mental illness, and therefore you can intervene on it. But that obviously uses a very large notion of hypothetical. But I'm just wondering as an example.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point. That it's about hypothetical intervention. So Woodward is, as opposed to some of the epidemiologists that Broadbent is arguing against, he says it's nothing that we can actually view as humans, but it's just something that we could imagine doing. Now, the problem with this sort of thought experiment that you just gave is that we don't know yet, we don't know what we would have to intervene on in the fetus, and it would have to, whatever we intervene on, it would have to have the right sort of, it would have to give us the right sort of statistical output in the end to count as a surgical intervention in the specific way that is defined by Woodward. It's not, you can't just do anything. You can't just kill the person and say, well, now there's no covariation anymore. That just wouldn't, that's not the kind of right kind of manipulation that you could perform.
Thanks very much.